You're listening to Truth To You with Jono on the Meander Radio Network. Remember, all programs are archived and available to download at truthtoyou.org. That's truth, number two, letter U.org. G'day to everybody listening around the world. Thank you for your company. Joining me this hour is my friend, Yoel Ben Shlomo, my Hebrew teacher of all things. And we're going to be continuing along the lines of kosher. Welcome back to the program, my friend.
It's good to be back, ready to charge more information. I received a lot of good feedback on the blood and fat issue, so I think we should carry on with this as much as we can.
Hey, people want to know. People want to know the finer details of kosher, right? And they also want to know. They also want to know about your services as a Hebrew teacher. And I should remind everybody that the email address for those. Now, do you still have some space, by the way?
Well, I've received a lot of emails. Again, learning Hebrew is a commitment. If you want to learn very good Hebrew, it takes a while.
So depending on where they want to slot into your timetable, maybe not.
Exactly.
Okay.
I've actually developed now. I have now several different courses that I can give in different levels.
People can inquire, and the email address is HebrewInIsrael@gmail.com. That's HebrewInIsrael@gmail.com. But today we're continuing about the topic of kosher, and you want to gross everybody out today. I know that much.
Yeah, there is a certain topic which is a bit gross. I would say something that we all live with, creatures that surround us everywhere we are, and they also get into our food. That will be one part of the discussion today, and I will try to define at least part of the animals we're allowed to eat and not allowed to eat. Mm-hmm. Give a bit of background about the history of certain things, specifically birds, which are a bit problematic. There's also a huge discussion about chicken. Are we allowed to eat chicken? Are we allowed to eat turkey? Yeah. Jewish traditions. And we'll start, I think, first of all, we'll go to Leviticus 11.
Yes.
And there we have a very detailed description of the animals we're allowed to eat and not allowed to eat. I'm not going to read the whole thing. What I think we're going to do is read mostly the definitions we have here and point out a few interesting things. So we mentioned last week blood and fat. So we'll carry on with the four-legged animals first of all.
Sure.
So the Torah says that we have, there's a behemah. The word behemah means livestock which people would have around them. Mm-hmm. Where they live. And there's a word called chaya. And chaya is a wild animal. So in the behemot, it's a wild animal. So in the behemot, it doesn't say names, it just gives you definitions.
Sure.
And definition says as follows, we're looking at verse 3. It says, Kol mafreset parsa, v'shosa at shesa perasot, ma'alat gira ba'behema, otah tochelo. Okay, so if you translate that for us.
In verse 3 of Leviticus 11, among the 11. Animals, whatever divides the hoof, having cloven hooves and chewing the cud, that you may eat.
So this definition is very, very clear. We have a hoof that's split. So bafreset parsa means an animal with a hoof. Shosa chesa perasot means that it has split hoofs.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually eats a cud. So actually what it means is the animal has the ability to take whatever it ate and bring it back to its mouth and chew it.
Yeah.
But we also have other animals that can do that.
Sure.
We have, for example, the camel. The camel chews its cud.
Yes.
And watch out, they actually do spit, and it smells. But on the other hand, if you've ever seen a camel, and I've seen quite a few of them because we have them around Israel, they don't have hoofs. They actually walk on like legs, and the skin that touches the ground is very, very thick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is one example. Now, the other example the Torah gives, and this is a very, very strange example. It says the word shafan. Now, shafan is a rabbit, but the word for rabbit in Hebrew is arnevet. So we're looking at the shafan, which means these rabbit-like creatures with small ears. Okay?
Very
clear. So for here in Israel, for example, we have the shafan sla'im, which looks like, I would say, kind of like a beaver without the beaver tail. With like a tiny little tail.
Okay.
And this animal lives amongst the rocks and everything. It looks as if it's chewing something all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of discussions about this animal, and this is one of the places where Tara is supposed to know everything, and we actually have a description here because we know this rabbit doesn't actually re-chew its food. So this is a bit of a brow riser. But again, you know, it gives you an example. Maybe it's giving examples to the level of knowledge that people had at those times.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have this animal that's actually it looks as if it's chewing. And so that has to do with chewing the cud. Then the Tar gives another example, which says chazir, which means a pig, a swine. And if anyone's seen a swine, and obviously a lot of people have, it actually has hoofs and it has split hoofs, but it doesn't reach where it's cut.
No.
So Torah also tells you, don't settle for like, oh, there's 2 out of 3 or 1 out of 3. No, don't settle for that. It has to be all three of them.
Okay, so because this is something that I found interesting, Yod, because I know that the Muslim tradition, for example, keeps a lot of a lot of similarities in the dietary laws, but it was interesting to me that they deemed it okay to eat camel.
So yes, actually the rules of halal in the Muslim tradition is not very clear to me, because for example, I know they don't eat swine, and I know they have to butcher by the neck and let it bleed.
Yep.
But on the other hand they eat seafood. They eat camel. I've heard of stories. I've never seen it with my own eyes, but I spoke with someone who actually has seen it with his own eyes, and this is someone I rely on. They eat donkeys, at least some of the villages here in Israel.
So that's interesting, isn't it? But because it goes on to say, it talks about whatever comes from the sea that has fins and scales, but not so when it comes to the Muslim tradition. There's anything that comes out of the sea they will eat. But specifically...
Exactly. I can't vouch for Islam. I can't explain why Islam does this. If anyone has very specific questions of this, they should turn over to an Islamic authority and ask them. I don't really know much about Muslim traditions, though I know I've worked with Arabs and I've asked questions and they told me things. So, for example, in Muslim tradition, if the dog is considered to be an impure animal to such a level that if it urinates in a room, or even to some stories I've heard, even if it enters a room, that room cannot be used as a mosque anymore.
Wow.
So there's interesting pieces of information. But again, the most famous, the most extreme one in Islam is the issue with pig. They're not even allowed to touch it.
Mm.
You know, for example, they feed, you have dog chewy things, which sometimes are made of pig ears.
Yeah, yes.
And I've seen them as well. Mm. And for a Muslim, won't even touch that. You know, he has a dog. He won't use that to feed his dog.
Mm, mm, mm.
So that's the most famous one. And they also don't drink wine. And
yeah,
that's another interesting discussion. Why they don't drink wine?
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because it's talking about
the subject. We're not going to talk about Islam.
No. So if we go back to verse 7 of 11, it says, "And the swine, though it divides the hoof, having cloven hooves, yet does not chew the cud, it is unclean for you." Then it goes on to say in verse 8, "Their flesh you shall not eat, their carcasses you shall not touch. They are unclean to you." So is that saying to us also that we cannot give our dogs the, you know, like the swine ears that you can, the chewy swine ears that you can buy for pets?
So I would say you are allowed to feed your dog the swine ears. Just you have to think about the idea that you're probably going to be impure when you touch them, and therefore, if you ever have to be pure for anything, just remember you touched swine ears and you actually touched part of a carcass. And if the temple is rebuilt, you have to be careful when you come to the temple.
Okay.
That's really the only issue here. Okay. I would say when it comes to fish, there's something else here. We'll get to that in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
They use the word l'shaketz, t'shaktsu, which means to literally despise it, keep it away from yourself. But we'll get to that in a moment.
Sure.
So we have the four-legged animals. The four-legged animals we know of that usually have split hoofs and chew their own cud are basically cows, oxes, sheep, and goat.
Yeah.
And until this very day, this is actually the only four-legged animals we eat when it comes to domesticated animals. The other stage the Torah describes is, as you said, are the fish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are other four-legged animals that we will get to in a moment. Let me see exactly where the verse is. 14.
14:4. And I think... So these, it says, these are the animals which you may eat. The ox, the sheep, the goat, the deer, the gazelle, the roe deer, the wild goat, the mountain goat, the antelope, and the mountain sheep.
if we look, there's things are doubled. You know, they're repeating the Torah. Deuteronomy is basically a summary of the Torah. Mm-hmm. And if we look at, as you mentioned, if we look at Deuteronomy 14 from verse 3, it actually gives you a more precise definition of what the animals you're allowed to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have the Torah in Leviticus says, and this is the chaya which you shall eat. And from all the domesticated animals which are on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Deuteronomy, it actually gives more of a definition. So it tells him, this is the domesticated animal, the hambehema, which you shall eat, which is a shol sechesavim v'seizim, which is basically an ox, a sheep, and a goat.
Yes.
And then he goes into a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 animals, wild animals, which are allowed to, you're allowed to eat them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we have a problem. The names of these animals are not clear in Hebrew today. You, for example, will have a translation if you be willing to reread the translation.
Well,
again.
Now I'm looking at this now, and I can see that there's okay. So, all right, let me read it again. From 3, it says, "You shall not eat any detestable thing. These are the animals which you may eat: the ox, the sheep, the goat, the deer, the gazelle, the roe deer, the wild goat, the mountain goat, the antelope, and the mountain sheep." I mean, so the first thing that pops into my mind, Yoel, is there's three different types of goats there, right? For example.
So first of all, the Dishon is actually the antelope.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the. So let me say, Ayal is a wild goat. There's certain things we do know. Tzvi is a gazelle or I would say a tzvi is a gazelle.
Yes.
A yachmur is already unclear. An akor is unclear.
Uh-huh.
A dishon, some people say, is the antelope. Te'o, for example, we use in the Hebrew, say te'o today, is a wild ox, or actually, more similar, a buffalo.
Okay, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the zamer is the most obscure one, but there's an opinion, if you're going to laugh about this one, there's an opinion that says the zamer is actually a giraffe. And this is a very, very old... It's a very, very old translation of what the Zamel means. This dates back to the 10th century from Babylon by Rav Saadia Gaon. He writes Zarafa,
mm-hmm.
which in Hebrew would be Girafa, which means giraffe.
Right.
And,
which, so of course, it is the giraffe is kosher, right? I mean, the giraffe does chew the cud and it does part the hoof, right?
Well, first of all, I don't think it has hoofs from what I remember. It might have hoofs. I've never really... going to see if it has hoofs or not, but it's an opinion. I mean, this is one of the opinions, and there's actually a Jew here in Israel, a very nice man called Zohar Amar, who is a I don't think he's a professor yet, but he is one of the heads of the of a research department in the Bar Ilan University near Tel Aviv, Mor Ramat Gan.
Mm-hmm.
That researched these things, and he actually started this thing that he called the Seudat Masoret, the tradition feast.
Uh-huh.
And he actually brought in a lot of these animals, birds, and different animals that we usually don't eat to keep the traditions alive of what we're allowed to eat and what we're not allowed to eat. Because in rabbinical law, you actually have to have a tradition that this animal is kosher. And this stretches over over the wild animals and the birds.
So in order to keep the tradition alive, he brought them in so that... Now, I remember reading something about this recently in the paper, I think, and it included a giraffe, right?
Could be. I know it's a well-known thing that the giraffe might be a kosher animal. I've never found anyone was able to slaughter a giraffe.
No.
There's also
you've never
this
had
joke
it yourself, obviously.
I've never had it myself. I've had our type of gazelles here in Israel.
Uh-huh.
It was caught in a net. It was actually caught in a vineyard, and a friend of mine actually got a hold of it and slaughtered it.
Uh-huh.
Again, it's very, very rare. You won't find venison meat here in Israel. I mean, it's not even imported.
Okay.
And the only meat you find here is really cow, which is slaughtered down south in South America.
Okay.
In Uruguay or different countries down there because of the huge Jewish communities there. So it was possible to establish big slaughterhouses.
Okay, so can I just be clear? So you're telling me the majority of red meat that is eaten in Israel is primarily beef?
It's primarily beef.
Do you eat a lot of lamb, a lot of sheep and goats at all, or...?
Well, first of all, we can't really grow sheep. We can't really raise a sheep and goat here in Israel because we don't have enough fields. Ah. There's a whole competition between the Jewish farmers and the Arab farmers.
Okay.
And I have friends which are shepherds, and they can have a couple hundred heads in their herds, but they don't really. There's not enough open fields. I mean, there's competition all the time.
Uh-huh.
And for example, the camel herders here in Israel, the Bedouin camel herders, actually have to move from the south to the north all the time with their camels because there's not enough feed.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
Because we've occupied, we have huge cities everywhere. We've over-occupied different areas, places where there used to be open fields. You can't really have anything. And the only places you can actually have herds is in Samaria and Judea. Okay. But again, you're in big competition with the Arabs around you because I want this field to feed my animals. And here comes the Bedouin with the Arab with his 500-head herd or camels, and he wants to feed his animals there as well.
Sure.
So there's a bit of a war going on who controls what and where.
Okay.
And so we don't have a lot of lamb here in Israel. When you do find lamb, it's extremely expensive, and you will not be able to walk into a store and say, I want goat. Dang. If you want to buy goat, you have to find someone who has a herd and buy the actual goat from them and
do it
find
yourself.
Someone to butcher it for you.
Yep. When you come here to Australia, I prepare for you a goat. I do a goat for you when you come. All right, getting back to kosher.
So as I said, you know, Ayal and Tzvi, Yachmur, I mean, most of the animals, you know, most of these animals, if you see them, you say, okay, that's a kosher animal, and you kind of like have sort of an idea in your head what it means. So Ayal and Tzvi is kind of clear for most people. It's either deer or gazelle, but Yachmor, Akor, and Dishon are very, very unclear.
Okay.
So, sorry, I can't give too many details about this. It's not very clear to us as Hebrew speakers and as biblical scholars.
Uh-huh.
There are different opinions. You can go on the internet and look for these names, and maybe you'll be able to find better definitions, but we can sit for hours explaining this, and we'll never get to the end of it.
Sure, okay, so moving on.
Stick to your beef and sheep. If you're hunters and you're hunting gazelle or deer, the chances are extremely high you can actually eat them.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, wild goat is you won't really find wild goat because you have to live in a desert area to find wild goat. Buffalo is 100% kosher. You can buy kosher buffalo in the States.
Mm-hmm.
My dad told me about buffalo steaks. I'm waiting for the moment that they actually bring this animal here to Israel. There's a bit of an argument with the chief rabbinate in Israel about this, so they're not allowing it in yet. But we're starting to find buffalo cheese, which means there's hope.
Uh-huh.
I just wonder how much they're going to try to charge for that. Okay, so going to the next stage are the sea animals.
Yes.
And the Torah gives us a very clear definition of what the sea animals are. It doesn't give names. What it says, if it has, it says here in the verse, we're looking at back to Leviticus 11, verse 9 and 10, I'll read in Hebrew. Et ze tochelu mikol asher b'mayim, mayim is water, kol asher lo snapir v'kaskeset. Snapir is a fin, kaskeset are the scales.
Mm-hmm.
So kol asher lo snapir v'kaskeset b'mayim, b'yamim v'nechalim otam tochelu, in the seas and the rivers.
Mm-hmm.
Nachal is a river or a stream, and yamim are plural seas. וכול אשר אין לו סטפיר וקסקסת במים ובנחלים מכל שרץ המים ומכל נפש החיה אשר במים שקט שם לכם. This is an interesting thing. ושקט ציו לכם, בשרם לא תאכלו ואת נבלתם תשקצו. כל אשר אין לו סטפיר וקסקסת במים שקט ציו לכם. So read from 9 all the way to 12.
To 12.
That'll be the section I just read. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to read, this is Leviticus 11 verses 9 to 12. These you may eat, all that are in the water, whatever in the water has fins and scales, whether in the sea or in the rivers, that you may eat. But in all the seas or in the rivers that do not have fins and scales, all that move on the water or any living thing which is in the water, they are an abomination to you. They shall be an abomination to you. You shall not eat their flesh, but you shall regard their carcasses as an abomination. Whatever in the water does not have fins or scales, that shall be an abomination to you. That's pretty clear, isn't it?
It's very, very clear. So what we're looking at is any fish, because there's nothing with fins and scales besides fish. Uh-huh. Any fish that has fins and scales in the water, what does that mean? There is an interesting story I've heard. I think this is to be a factual thing. There is a type of fish that when you pull it out of the water, it loses its scales.
Ah, right.
So some people want to say, why does it say bamaim in the water? It means it's in the water, it had scales, but when it's outside of the water, it might lose its scales. So maybe that's why the Torah is being very specific and says in the water. But basically what this means is most seafood is not kosher. There's abundant amount of fish that you're allowed to eat, you know, salmon, cod, halibut, there's a whole so many types of fish you're allowed to eat. But when you go into a store, and this is the orthodox thing, if you go into a store and the store sells different types of fish, some of them kosher, some not kosher, you have to be able to identify it being as a kosher animal. And if they remove the head, sometimes it's difficult to identify the type of fish if you don't have the head.
Yes.
What you have to do is to be able to see that there's a fin and there's scales. And here it is, when you buy fish, if you buy vacuum packaged fish, you actually receive it with part of the scales, part of the skin with the scales still attached to it. Yeah. So you actually see this is a kosher animal, because a lot of, for example, salmon, you buy a whole chunk of salmon, it will come with a piece of skin with scale, because this goes out from outside of Israel. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Now it says here the word you said moving. The word here in Israel, the word here in Hebrew is sheretz. Sheretz is a creepy crawler of any sort.
Mm-hmm.
Which just goes to the next issue. I'll get to that really in a second. We're going to skip the birds. We'll get to the birds in the end, and then first we'll go to the issue of the creepy crawlers. And I'm calling creepy crawlers just to be cute.
Yeah.
So fish is very, very simple. There's also a law, I think it's international, but I know it's in the States. You have to separate seafood from the rest of the food, which means if you go into a regular restaurant and you say, I want fish, you have to first be very, very careful, because shrimp, you know, not to eat shrimp, no lobsters, no crab,
no oysters, or mussels, or
no oysters, like no mussels, no, nothing of the sort. So no frog legs, if anyone likes French cuisine,
snails,
all these snails. Yeah. Snails really has to do with creepy crawlers. No snails, and. You know, I know there's a lot of people who really like lobster with butter. Sorry to say, if you want to keep kosher, you can't eat that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything of that sort, I'm making a whole list. No eel. There's eel dishes. There used to be a thing called eel pie in England. All these creatures, sea creatures, land creatures, which appear, you're not allowed to eat them. Even in the book of Isaiah, in the end, it seriously criticizes the people that eat the flesh of the swine and the flesh of the mouse, which is a very interesting thing. Maybe people don't know this, but for example, a dormouse was part of the Roman cuisine.
Really?
People in Rome ate dormice as part of the everyday diet.
Jeez,
so they were eating any protein. Any protein that's lying around. So, for example, sushi, which is one of my favorites. Sushi is a problem because you actually have to know what type of sushi you're eating.
Yes.
Now, everyone knows the American style sushi, which has the nori seaweed. By the way, you're allowed to eat seaweed. Seaweed is a plant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, you just have to make sure there's no bugs in it. So you should buy a kosher seaweed.
Mm-hmm.
I love sushi. I at least once a month I go out to eat sushi with my wife.
Sushi is great.
And it's also very, very healthy,
but
you have to be very careful. So first of all, the types of sushi when you're actually eating an entire animal. So for example, a sea cucumber can be part of sushi. So in general, if you go to a traditional sushi place or if you're flying to Japan, you can't really eat anything there unless it's a completely vegetarian place, okay, because they use the same knives, they're using the same everything, and that is a problem, okay? So that's seafood. It's very simple, very clear. You walk into a restaurant, you want to have fish, you have to tell them. The only way around this is you have to tell them, I'm allergic to all seafood except for fish, and by law. And if they're lying to you, you can actually sue them.
Uh-huh.
This is mostly in the United States. By law, they have to separate it.
Okay.
Okay, I have friends who go to the States and they eat only kosher. And when they go to these fish places, again, these friends of mine are not Orthodox, but they keep kosher. Uh-huh. And they go in, they say, I can eat only, say, salmon. I'm allergic to everything else. You have to okay. then they actually have to clean off the cooking plate to serve you this fish.
And they use all separate implements to prepare it and so on and so forth. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. They have to separate these things. I don't know what level, but I know this is a law in the States because a lot of people are allergic to seafood uh-huh. and not necessarily fish. And it's a life endangering thing. So they actually have to. This is why the law is as such, because it can kill people if they even touch it.
Sure. Okay? Sure.
So we're gonna skip to a different verse.
Incidentally, let me just throw into the mix. But just before we get there, Yoel. I know that certain types of people question certain types of tuna, right? Tuna has fins and scales, but there is a fish called a dog tooth tuna, which doesn't actually have scales, believe it or not. It has fins. It looks like a tuna. I don't know. I'm not sure that it is in fact a tuna formally, but it doesn't have scales, and so.
So that will disqualify. So, for example, bluefin tuna, if I'm not mistaken, that's what it's called, is also disputed here in Israel. Mm-hmm. And the OU, the American, the Orthodox Union Kashrut body in the United States, gives it a kosher stamp. Mm-hmm. But here in Israel, for example, the rabbinate will not give a kosher stamp because they're arguing, is this a kosher animal?
Sure.
Sorry, is this a kosher fish?
Sure.
So the next thing we have to discuss, and this will be the focal point. So I'll do the birds because this issue with the bugs is a bit long.
Okay.
The birds. So we actually have 20 odd birds which appear from verse 13 all the way to verse 20.
Yes.
And again, this is another place where we have a problem. We don't really know what all the names of the birds mean.
Mm-hmm.
So again, Dar Amal, who's this PhD doctoral guy in the Bar Ilan University, he actually wrote an entire book in Hebrew, unfortunately, called The Tradition of Fowl in Jewish Halakha.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually goes over all the information, or at least most of the information we have about different birds and what we know about them being kosher.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll read the names in Hebrew. I'll read the verse. You can translate. And sure. I'll try to identify some of these birds. And I'll, in general, tell people what are the general birds acceptable inside Jewish tradition regarding the kosher birds.
Sure.
So it says as follows. Vet elet eshaktsu min ha'of, of this bird, of fowl, l'yachlu sheketzem et ha'nesher v'et ha'peres v'et ha'oznia v'et ha'da'a v'et ha'aya lemina. את כל עורב למינו, ואת בת היענה, ואת התחמס ואת השחף, ואת הנץ למינהו, ואת הכוס ואת השלח ואת הינשוף, ואת התנשמת ואת הקעת ואת הרחם, ואת החסידה הענפה למינה, ואת הדוחיפת ואת העטלף. And this list repeats itself in Deuteronomy with a few changes.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, it mentions this other bird that says Aya and Daya. It adds the word. Let me look at the list a second. So it actually adds the Hara'a, which is a bird which doesn't appear in the list in Leviticus. And we don't really know why do we have this difference. There's no clear explanation to it yet. Okay, so read the translation.
From
and my guess is part of this translation actually will be kind of accurate.
Okay, so this is from verse 13, Leviticus 11, and these you shall regard as an abomination among the birds. They shall not be eaten. They are an abomination. The eagle, the vulture, the buzzard, the kite, the falcon after its kind, every raven after its kind, the ostrich, the short-eared owl, the seagull, the hawk after its kind, the little owl, the fisher owl, and the screech owl, the white owl, the jackdaw, and the carrion vulture, the stork, the heron after its kind, the hoopoe, and the bat. That's interesting that it has the bat at the end there.
Yeah, so why does they have the bat? I was actually going to pick that one first. They didn't have anthropology then. So this is a flying creature.
Sure.
So as far as they know, this is a bird. They don't look at it as a mammal. So this is why the bat is here. So actually, this translation we just read is really close. And I would say you can actually, to a certain degree, kind of trust this translation, what you just read, because it kind of fits of the translate. What I would understand as a Hebrew-speaking person who understands the Tanakh, that would be very, very close to what it explains. So what we're looking at, most of these animals are predators.
Yes.
Most of these animals are predators. The ostrich, for example, doesn't really fly, and it's not really considered to be a predator. The stork, for example, is not really a predator, but you got different versions of owls and different for example, the word shalach sometimes is actually translated as a seabird or water bird that hunts. But again, when you say you have the shachaf, which is actually a seagull. So again, the Torah is giving you general names, which will probably cover. When you say seagull, you're probably meaning all sea type of birds. Because the Torah is not really, it's not anthropology. It's not really giving you the exact definition that we have today. When we start categorizing everything to like really Latin names and very specific concepts and very specific ideas. But in this case, the Torah is giving you a general idea. So in general, all hunting birds, all vultures types of birds are not, you're not allowed to eat them. The only thing I disagree with is the osnia. Okay, the osnia is actually the vulture. And I think you said, so nesher is eagle, peres is one type of vulture, and osnia is another type of vulture. Both very, very big birds. Now the osnia, I don't really have an English translation for that, but the osnia is really a bird you would find mostly in the Mediterranean area. So the peres and the osnia are two very Mediterranean birds. But again, you can find similar families of these birds around the world. And this is where we go to a very important issue. Here specifically, again, we have a problem that we don't really know exactly the exact names of these animals in modern day Hebrew, and they had this problem throughout the centuries. So what we do know is all hunting birds, all predator birds, are you know how to eat them. There was, and this is a very strange story, there was a time in Europe around, I think, the 12th century where Jews actually ate the stork because they thought the stork was a kosher bird. And it went on for a couple of decades, and a rabbi realized it was completely incorrect. A rabbi who knew the Hebrew better than the people who lived there stopped it and told them not to eat this bird. And how do we know that the stork is the chasida? Because it says chasida b'roshim beita. Says in the Book of Psalms, it says that the stork, its home is in the peaks of trees. And if you've ever seen a stork, and it says Boroshim, which is a pine tree, it's one of the types of pine trees. And here in Israel, they're in abundant quantities. If someone actually comes to Israel, it looks like one of those, I'll compare it, it looks like a Christmas tree. It's one of those long coned trees.
Sure.
It's a long coned tree, and in my own eyes, I've seen it. You actually see storks living on the top of these trees. This proves that chasida means a stork.
Sure.
So a pelican will not be kosher. All these like large birds that live in the water or live on ground. An emu won't be kosher, for example. But on the other hand, pigeons are kosher. We also have pigeons were brought on the altar.
Yes.
And turtle doves are kosher.
Yes.
And now we're going to a very, very interesting subject, which goes into what about chickens? What about turkey?
Yeah.
So first of all, carrots have a big discussion. You know, I'm going to mix in a bit of carrots because I know the crowd who's listening to this will be interested to a certain degree. There are a lot of carrots that will not eat any bird besides the pigeon and a turtle dove because they say we don't know what these other birds are, and B, they say we know these animals were born in the altar, so we know they're 100% kosher.
Sure,
but I have met carrots who eat chicken, and the discussion is also over turkey. So they say that chicken might be a member of the family of, for example, I think they say the duchifat, which is a tree bird, but it kind of has like a thing on its head that makes it look like as if it's related to the chicken, but on the other, and some people claim the chicken wasn't even native to this area. And to disprove that, we actually have a bula, a ring stamp, the actual clay piece from the if you've ever seen ancient rings, a person will stamp, and here in this area they usually have some kind of animal. And there's a bula. The bula is the clay piece that is the actual seal itself, where you seal a letter.
Yes.
There's an actual one which has an image of a chicken.
Really?
Of a rooster.
Okay.
So we know roosters were native to this area. Some people claim all these were just used for fights. But again, we know these animals did exist in this area. We know these birds did exist in this area.
Sure.
And so we know it is native to Israel. It is native to the Mediterranean. Did they actually eat it? My opinion is that they did. Mm-hmm. I do eat chicken. Mm-hmm. I do, but there is a bigger discussion inside the Orthodox world regarding turkey, because turkey is not native to this area. Turkey comes from the United States,
yes.
And we don't know into which family to put it in exactly, though I think they already have a definition for it. I think it actually is related to the chicken to a certain degree.
Yes.
It's just a really big one.
Yes.
So I have met people who know eat turkey. The students of the Shla, who lived, I think, about 250 or 300 years ago, mm-hmm. in Europe, he told his students not to eat the turkey, and there are, until this very day, people, Jews, who follow by that teaching, and they don't eat turkey. But in general, turkey is acceptable in the rabbinical world, in the Orthodox world. Chicken is acceptable.
But it gets there are other birds that are even more questionable, aren't there? Because you get to things like the swan and the guinea fowl, which are even more debated in some circles.
Exactly. There's a big debate regarding the swan and the duck and all these seabirds. So, sweet water birds.
Mm.
So, for example, duck actually is accepted in the Orthodox world. Anything from the duck family is accepted.
Uh-huh.
The swan, no one eats swan, but there is an opinion that says it's a kosher bird. I've never met anyone who actually eats it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had swan. I've had duck, but I've never had the swan. And I actually kind of don't want to eat swan, because it's a really, really beautiful bird. I wouldn't eat it. It's just, why? It's a pretty animal.
It's beautiful.
But if you're in distress and you have to eat it, I think there is an opinion that says you're allowed to eat it. Mm-hmm. Again, don't take my word for it. This requires more research. But duck is acceptable. And given the whole list of the birds you're allowed to eat, there's like thousands of birds you're allowed to eat, because Torah gives them like 20 or 21 birds, yes, you're not allowed to eat.
Yes.
So it gives a huge variety.
A
so, for example, in Frankfurt, yeah, in Frankfurt up to the late 1800s, they actually had what they call the tradition feast, like Zohar Amal made,
mm-hmm.
Like it was over 10 years ago. And I actually spoke with him face to face about this. He said it was wonderful. He said the only thing we couldn't get is giraffe, because it's illegal.
Okay.
And and they also ate different insects, which are kosher, which I'll touch very briefly because that's also detailed. They actually had a tradition where they would sit down, the elders of Frankfurt, and they would bring these certain birds they knew which were considered to be kosher,
mm-hmm.
and they would eat them. So, for example, one of the birds mentioned there are these tiny little brown birds you find all over the place, specifically here in Israel, which are considered to be kosher. These are tiny little birds. We just call them tzipol,
mm-hmm.
which just means bird. And you can find them everywhere here in Israel. They're literally everywhere. And these were considered to be kosher birds. No one eats them today, but many communities, Jewish communities, actually had traditions on these, the whole list of birds,
yes,
saying they're kosher. There's a list from Italy. There's a list from Frankfurt. There's a list from France. There's a list from Arabian countries where Jews had definitions.
Yes.
And so there are traditions, but again, in modern-day society, we don't eat these birds, so many people say, how is that kosher? Because there is a dying tradition about these birds. So again, if you go into your supermarket and you want to buy chicken, you have to make sure it's a kosher chicken, because it has to be slaughtered by the neck and bled. But in general, chicken shouldn't be a problem. Most people eat chicken. It's a very, very small number of Karaites who will not eat chicken.
Okay. Well, I love the chicken. I mean, we've got 10 chickens here, and we have them for their eggs. We have them for their meat. And the other reason why we have them, Yol, is because to let them free range around the house here in Australia, there's a lot of spiders, and a lot of these spiders are very poisonous. We don't like the spiders, but they eat the spiders.
And there's another one.
Funnelweb.
Funnelweb. These are the two most dangerous, the two most dangerous spiders in the world.
That's right. And we have a lot of redbacks, and they take care of that. And they generally keep the insect population a little bit lower around the house, which is a great thing. Now, speaking of the insect population, my friend, have we got time to do this?
Now the gross part.
Okay.
Yeah, we have time to do this because we can deal with the insects now. Okay, so insects. Okay, now I'm going to gross everyone out. I pre-apologize to everyone. Okay, so insects. The Torah says, and we're going to look at, we're looking at Leviticus 11, verse 41. Okay. It says, "Yevichol hasheretz hashoretz al haaretz, sheketz hu lo ye'achel." And this is a very, very important verse here, verse 42. "Kol holech al gachon v'chol holech al arba, ad kol marbe raglayim lachem hasheretz hashoretz al haaretz, lo tochilum ki sheketz hem." Can you read the two verses, please?
41 says, "And every creeping thing that creeps on the earth shall be an abomination. It shall not be eaten. Whatever crawls on its belly, whatever goes on all fours, whatever has many feet among all creeping things that creep on the earth, these you shall not eat, for they are an abomination." 43 says, "You shall not make yourselves abominable with any creeping thing that creeps, nor shall you make yourselves unclean with them, lest you be defiled by them."
Okay, so this is also, again, very clear. I mean, this entire discussion is very, very simple and very, very clear. But in everything we just spoke about, you know, everything is very, very clear except for the definitions of the animals. Mm. But here specifically, we're going to have a problem. The issue is that the Torah is basically saying you're allowed to eat any bugs, worms, flies, you know, cockroaches, anything which is non-actual animal. So we can put in definition anything which is an insect. And this is the major problem with insects. So remember I mentioned the issue of the falafel when I said you have to check your falafel. And I grossed you out on that one. So the issue is very, very simple. Here in the Jewish tradition, and this is something which was done throughout the centuries by everyone, is any type of food you have has to be checked. Okay, now it doesn't mean every time you take a slice of bread, you have to check the slice of bread. What does it mean? When you have grains of sorts, when you have legumes of sorts, you're going to have a problem. You keep these things in storage. And the problem that develops are insects that get into it.
Yes.
Okay, so for example, take the chickpeas, the hummus beans. One of the restaurants we used to work at, we used to make falafel every day. And no, I can't give anyone the recipe. I'm sworn to secrecy on that one. And I've had people ask for the recipe. I asked specific permission for that specific person. I gave them the recipe, but I have to ask specific permission because this is going to, if I give the recipe out loud, I'm going to get into trouble with this guy who's this really, really good chef I used to work with. Wow. And he had a falafel stand for quite a few years, and he developed his own method. So the problem is, for example, with the chickpeas, is they come here dry. You buy them here in Israel dry. You have to soak them. And this is specifically for bean type of things. Okay, the process how to check things. The bean type of things, which would be beans, chickpeas, black-eyed peas, anything of that sort.
Lentils,
not including lentils. Okay. Lentils are a bit different. All large bean type of beans, you have to soak them in water. You soak them in water for 24 hours at least. No, sorry, not more than 24 hours because then it starts rotting.
Yes.
You drain them. Now you should soak them preferably in the fridge because if you leave them outside and it's very hot, they'll just spoil. And then you pour out the water and you have to go basically look at each one of them because you will find entry holes of worms or entry holes of other insects. For example, you have the ants, different types of ants that get into your food. And before you use any beans, I mean, in general, if you buy from a good company and it's a clean package, I mean, one of the things you first have to do is, let's start from the beginning. When you go to the store and you go in, you buy a brand, you have to make sure it's a good brand because cheap brands or not really high quality brands don't always keep their stock of beans, for example, in good conditions, in clean places, in clean sacks. And you have to look at the package. If you see like tiny little grains, you know, not pieces of the actual bean, but like little, like as if there's sand inside, don't buy the package.
Because something's eating.
Something is eaten through it.
Yes.
And you sometimes when you open these packages, you find like little strings. and that has to do with worms that got into the package, or worms that got were in the bean to begin with.
Ooh.
Okay, so you try to find the cleanest package. It doesn't mean you start going through the aisle and checking every package. In general, if it's more or less clean, you buy it. Don't, if you see like little cobs, or if you're seeing like sand, literally brownish, light brown, yellowish sand, don't buy it. It means there's something in it. You take it home, you pre-soak it, because you anyhow have to soak these things to start cooking, and you have to go over them, and you have to look if there's any entry holes, if there are any bugs. I mean, I've personally seen, you know, sometimes they go black, you crack them open, and you see a worm inside. And you have to go over these things, and I've seen, I mean, it's gross. I sat down one day helping out the guy who was in charge of the kashrut in the restaurant, one of the restaurants I worked at, and he showed me, look, worms, caterpillars, everything. You know, this was the owner went and bought from some obscure place. He didn't buy from his regular dealer. He buys his regular supplier, and we found lots and lots of things, and we were almost convinced to throw the whole thing away. But he said we can save this, but because, you know, in restaurants they try to save as much as they can. Okay, so that's one example. Now, lentils, you have to pre-check them when they're still dry. And again, lentils are small. If there's anything inside the package, you see it almost immediately. The way to do it is you take a sifter.
Yes.
Not a sifter. Not exactly the metal ones you use, not for draining spaghetti, but there's like these sifters. Exactly. It's not like a colander. Yeah. And you put them in and you shake it to see if anything drops out.
Okay.
Because there might be eggs inside. You don't have to do this. I'm saying you can spread it out on any little bits and pieces you just don't pick out. Uh-huh. But you have to go over them very, very quickly with us, looking at them very close. You have to sit there for each one. Just a general look.
Because I was going to ask. You don't pick up each one and examine it with a magnifying glass. But what you're saying is, don't just take it off the shelf and go and use it. I mean, look at it first. Open it up.
And
have a look at
rice,
it.
Rice, you check rice. Yeah, rice again. You take rice, you put it down on a plate or on your counter, and you go over it. And usually, if you see like a large black dot, that means there's an egg inside or something penetrated. You also should go over these things, because there's sometimes bits of stone inside or earth, and you don't want to eat that. And that's the general idea of how you check those things. Again, specific details. If anyone has any specific details, specific questions, just post a question on a comment on the website. Flour, for example, you have to sift flour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, flour. Why? Because you can find flies, anything, basically anything. I've found in flour bugs of different sorts. So you buy a special sifter and you sift your flour. And by the way, if your person is baking bread at home, sifting your flour before you use it is good for the baking process, because it makes the bread a bit fluffier.
Okay.
It's good to sift your flour before you use it when you're making bread.
Okay.
More specifications. Okay. Fish. Okay. Many sea fish, and even pond fish, but sea fish have worms in them. Now, if your person goes out and buys a whole fish, you have to remember salmon, for example, has worms in the head.
And you
take a head, you open the head, and you can literally see worms.
Now,
it doesn't mean that all your food is going to be contaminated. But again, you have to keep your eyes open when you buy, for example, fish, because fish around the fish, the worms, the different insects that live in the water. There's different bugs that live around there. There are certain flies that when you go into a fish market, and it's not one of these closed fish markets where there's a guy behind a counter and everything's nice and clean. If you go to like a regular if you live by the coast and these guys selling fish on the coast itself, we have that here in Israel.
Yeah.
And you go to the shuk here in Jerusalem, and here in Israel, not everything is like perfect clean. If you go to a supermarket, you'll find it clean, everything's packed and everything's nice and fresh. Here in Israel, again, you go to the market, it's also fresh, but you're looking, it's open, it's up out in the open, and you have to be careful, because sometimes the certain flies will come in and they'll inject their eggs into the fish.
Oh,
and if the
man.
Fish, say, sits for a short while, and it takes time to hatch. So, I mean, if they're eggs there, you probably won't find them. But there's a good chance you might find worms. This way, when you take a piece of fish, if you bought fresh fish, and usually around the world, I mean, specifically living in the United States, and I'll give a little example of the United States because I know what goes on there. Mm. If you, for example, go to a supermarket and you're buying your fish, and it's a good place, you probably won't have any problem.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, but if you go out and fishing,
uh-huh.
Okay, besides gutting the fish, which you have to do, and taking out all the breathing systems and everything,
yes.
You have to open up the head to see if there's any worms inside. You have to check the skin. You have to check the interior of the fish to make sure there are no worms.
Okay, so let me get this right, Joel, because if you open up the fish, you open the head of the fish and there are worms inside, do you discard the whole fish?
No. First of all, if you're grossed out by it, you can just chop off the fish and chop off the head and throw it out.
Because, uh-huh. I mean, generally speaking, people don't eat the head, right? I mean,
First of all, no, it's not true. First of all, it's not true. During the Yom Teruah here in Israel, there's a Jewish tradition, Yom Teruah. We also call it Rosh Hashanah.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the seventh month of the biblical calendar.
Yes.
There's a tradition to eat the head of a fish to symbolize that it will be the head of things and not the tail of things.
Uh-huh.
So people do eat the fish head. There's even sometimes wools over the eyeballs, which I personally don't eat because I think of the idea of eating the fish head. But people do eat the fish head, and this is why, for example, there's a lot of awareness to these things.
Yeah.
I actually have here at home this three-volume book by a rabbi called Rabbi Vaya, who's originally from Chile, and he gives like a lot of information about these things. I think you can also buy this book in English, but again, you have to remember, if you buy this book, don't take everything he says for granted. Also, look at your own experience, because he overdoes it a bit.
Okay.
And he gives a lot of these very extreme opinions,
mm-hmm.
or cases, and most of the things he describes that I have not seen.
Okay.
Next stage, fruits and vegetables. So if you buy fresh fruit, you shouldn't find any problem. You shouldn't have any problem if it's a fresh piece of fruit. Again, bell peppers, for example, if you like to eat bell peppers, I do suggest to cut them open and eating them, eating actual fillets of bell peppers, mm-hmm. peppers, because I've heard cases where there was a worm inside and someone took a bite and, a worm!
Ah.
So you have to kind of watch what you're eating.
Okay.
My
little piece of advice, take each leaf of lettuce and wash it separately.
Exactly. So, for example, lettuce, in Israel, we have a highly developed awareness of the issue of bugs. So we actually have special bug-free leaf vegetables, lettuce, anything green, basically. Literally anything green, from different types of lettuce to basil, spring onions, anything you would like.
Mm.
And these things are grown not attached to the ground in these special boxes with sand inside of them.
Oh.
The only thing you have to be really worried about is the sand. So you have to wash it off and take the sand out.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But around the world, I don't think you can find any of these types of things. So what you have to do, for example, lettuce, which is a classic, lettuce, you wash it off, preferably with soap water, also mm-hmm. get any types of pesticides out of it. Again, there are different types of pesticides. The ones that last 2 weeks, ones that last 1 month, ones that last 24 hours. There are different types of pesticides. So you should anyhow wash your fruits and vegetables because there's pesticide, and you can't always trust that the farmer actually used the pesticide for 24 hours before he picked them and sent them out.
Sure.
Okay, because I've heard stories where they use pesticide of, say, 2 weeks, and it was put on, and the next day they shipped it out. So you have to be very, very careful.
Yeah.
Always wash your fruit and vegetables.
Mm.
Always.
Mm.
And there's, for example, in kitchens, I remember when I was, like, the first time I worked in the kitchen, and I didn't wash a certain tomato for a certain sauce, and I was literally stopped on the spot. I just forgot. I picked it out. I walked out. It looked perfectly clean, and I walked with it to to my station, and I was stopped by one of the workers and said, no, anything you take from the vegetable rack, you have to wash. Never assume it's been washed. And even if you know, even if you saw it was washed, preferably you wash it again because you don't know who's touched it. You don't know where it's been. You don't know. And also your boss is going to see you trying to use a vegetable that hasn't been washed, at least in his opinion. No right. matter what you say, they probably won't believe you that it's been washed.
Right.
So, you first washing it for pesticide, and then you take the lettuce leaf, and this is the leafy vegetables are the most complex things to check.
Mm.
You actually have to stand in front of a light and look closely. And there's a type of worm that exists on lettuce that its color is very similar to the color of lettuce. Now, I'm talking about what's called Arabian lettuce, the green long lettuce, the different types of lettuce.
Uh-huh.
There's iceberg, which is more white.
Yes.
There's the marsh, which is kind of like purple. There's different varieties of lettuce.
So you're saying there's a camouflage worm in the long lettuce?
There's a camouflage worm in lettuce in general, and you have to make sure you find it.
Ew.
Okay? You have to be very, very careful. And even if you buy good, high-quality lettuce, I have seen in good high-quality lettuce, I've seen this worm, okay? So that's one thing. So you have to look closely what you're buying. Cabbage has caterpillars in it. You have to break the cabbage apart,
yes.
and wash it.
I've experienced it
for a while.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid, before we actually had the super-duper kosher veggies, I remember soaking with my mother, cabbage, and I literally saw caterpillars floating out of the... the cabbage, the cauliflower. You have to literally check everything slowly, bit by bit.
Yeah.
Cabbage is less of an issue because cabbage is very, very tight. So you usually have to remove the outer leaves,
yes.
wash it a bit,
yes.
and usually it's clean.
Mm.
Usually cabbage will be clean, and it's only the outer layer which is a problem. Dried fruits. Dried fruits are a big, big issue. First of all, because of storage.
Uh-huh.
Second of all, a lot of the dry fruits you would buy around the world come from, for example, dates. Most dates come from the Mediterranean.
Yes.
Many of them come from Turkey.
Yes.
Okay? And what you have to do is you have to open them up, take the pip out, and you actually have to look closely inside. It takes a couple of seconds if you're used to it. And you actually have to hold up to the light because you can actually see if there's anything inside.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen things, I've seen worms, I've seen bugs. And sometimes when you open up, you can see like little pebbles or dust of sorts,
yeah.
which means it's infected
with
eggs
man.
Or anything.
I've never done that. I've always, I mean, I know, yeah, a lot of the dates come from Turkey or Iran, but I've never opened it up to looking, I've never ever thought to do that.
Well, now you know.
Yeah.
also different types of nuts, cashew nuts. I basically, every cashew nut I eat, I crack open, then I eat it. Okay, this is how strict I am about this because I have experience. Now, again, if you go out and you buy something from a place which is very, very clean, you shouldn't have too much of a problem. But again, mistakes happen, and you have to pay attention to what you have in your hand because I've opened up cashew nuts, for example, and I've seen ants inside. And I buy from a very, very clean place that replaces its stock almost – maybe sometimes two or three times a day. They're very, very popular,
mm-hmm.
and they're very, very clean there. And still, every once in a while, I find an ant.
Sure.
And I've shown it to the owner. He says, yeah, there's nothing I can actually do about this. You know, there's not really much I can do about this.
Mm.
Okay, so another issue is, and I think we're starting to really run out of time, but another issue we have, are different colorants, a specific color, a red colorant that comes from a bug.
Ah, now I've heard about this, yes. Yeah, so certain colors, added colors, food coloring, right?
Food coloring
comes from an unkosher animal.
So we have another. There's a red colorant that comes from a certain beetle, which unfortunately I can't find the name of it at the moment. Maybe if someone out there in the crowd remembers what this thing is called, please post it.
Yes. Yeah.
Put it in the comments. This is a very, very important thing because you can find this as a red colorant in a lot of types of food. I've heard of yogurts that have this colorant, and you're not allowed to eat this thing, at least in my opinion, because it says Nivatam Teshaketsu, you have to keep these things away from you.
Yeah.
And it's a very strange idea. How can it be that and bees, by the way, I have to mention bees as well. Yeah. How can it be that we can eat something which comes from a non-kosher animal? The other thing is there's a gelatin that's used from swine,
yes,
which I personally think you're not allowed to eat. Mm-hmm. So when you buy something with gelatin, you have to make sure it's vegetarian,
yes,
or fish gelatin.
Yes.
Okay? And there's actually no vegetarian gelatin. Sorry. It's basically fish gelatin. There was this rumor years ago that they were able to develop a vegetarian gelatin, but gelatin only exists in living animals, so at least as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the issue of honey, bees.
Yes.
How can it be that people eat honey? So, first of all, the word dvash, eretz levat chalav udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey. When it says dvash, when Torah says dvash, it actually means any sweet substance, which will also include silan, which is date honey.
Date honey or fig. Fig honey.
Fig honey. Anything, any thick, sweet liquid that can ooze from a fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's usually what the Torah is referring as honey. And usually when we say Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, or when we have the seven species of land of Israel was blessed with, when they say Dvash, Eretz Zeit Shemen Udvash.
Mm-hmm.
So Zeit Shemen is the olive which produces oil. And Dvash is usually translated as dates, because dates, literally when they're very, very soft, if you ever seen the Majhul, which is like the best date that exists, a big, nice, juicy date,
mm-hmm,
and it literally turns into honey if you crush it enough.
Okay.
So we have bee honey, and that's a very good question. In the Orthodox world, we actually do eat honey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason to prove this, I think this is the only way to prove it, is the story of Samson.
Yes.
Where a lion attacks him. He,
yes,
kills the lion.
Yes.
And he comes out back after a while, and there's bees inside. Mm-hmm. And he takes the honey and eats it.
Right. So now there's two, okay, but there's two problems presented there, right? Because he's eating, I guess what some might say is the byproducts of an unclean animal, but the other thing, of course, is that it's found within the carcass of an unclean animal. How are we to understand that?
It's a good question. Samson in the Tanakh is not presented as someone who follows everything in the Torah.
No.
I mean, obviously he goes and marries this pagan woman,
mm,
and he lives with her. He doesn't even take her into his own village and converts her. He just says, okay, we're married, okay, whatever. And his parents, mm, don't like this,
mm,
but still. So, and you see, he doesn't tell his parents where this comes from.
Mm.
So, in
my
opinion,
he gives them some of the honey, and he doesn't tell them where it's come from. Yeah,
exactly. So, for the moment, I still eat bee honey. There's also research done about this. They say it's not really, doesn't really come, it's not really part of the bee. The bees process the honey in their system, but then they somewhat vomit it. They actually release it through the mouth,
mm-hmm,
and that's how the honey comes to existence.
It's a combination of flower pollen and bee saliva, if you like.
Exactly.
It's basically honey, but it's not actually part of the bee's anatomy.
Mm-hmm. So I personally still eat bee honey, but if anyone out there says, I don't want to eat bee honey because it comes from a non-kosher animal, I can completely understand them.
Sure.
Because the story about Samson is not clear enough to say that would be proof they're allowed to eat honey. But the Torah says you're not allowed to eat the flesh, you know, to eat the flesh of these animals. It also has to do what happens with eggs of unkosher animals.
Mm.
Okay, so we don't eat eggs of unkosher animals.
Unkosher
birds.
Okay, now this, you know, I don't know if we have time for this, Yol, but this leads us to the next question. We're gonna have to do a number.
You're gonna have to do a lot of edit. You're gonna have to do a lot of editing on this one, and you might actually get two programs out of this one in the end.
We might have to, because we talk about bee honey, then we talk about eggs, and then the next thing that it leads to is milk. Can you take milk from an unkosher animal? And you know, I'm referring to the verse in Bereshit that talks about the milking camels that Jacob gave to Esau, right?
I think you're going to be able to make two programs out of this one in this way.